From our 901 Mission Street studios, you are listening to the San Francisco Chronicle.
Adam Shankman is full of nonstop energy, which is good because he appears to have about 6 jobs at any given time. He was a choreographer and dancer. He danced for Janet Jackson and Paula Abdul videos. He was a longtime judge on So You Think You Can Dance on TV. He's written young adult novels, produced film and television, and somehow he has time to direct movies. A lot of movies. The Wedding Planner, set in San Francisco, is one of his. The 2007 remake of Hairspray. And now What Men Want, the sort of but not really remake of the Mel Gibson Helen Hunt movie What Women Want. Taraji P. Henson is a sports agent who doesn't do romance until she can suddenly hear what men are thinking. It has 2 hallmarks of Shankman movies. He's exceptional working with actors who are seemingly out of their normal typecasting. Henson has a lot of physical comedy scenes and is excellent in the movie. And it's not mean. There are likable characters everywhere, and you feel good walking out of the theater. Shankman is delightful in this interview. We talk about What Men Want. We talk a lot about the Bay Area, why San Francisco is the most theatrical city. And Shankman tells a great story about meeting John Waters before he shot the 2007 Hairspray. It's worth sticking around for. Datebook Podcast, thanks for listening. Adam Shankman, welcome to the San Francisco Chronicle. Welcome to San Francisco.
Thank you so much. I am so happy to be here. I miss this city. I love this city.
Yeah.
I'm not here enough. My dad is from this area, so I grew up coming here. I remember my whole life. I remember my mother set. We were staying at the Fairmont. My mother set fire to our room. That's one of my favorite memories from growing up.
Okay, I already have a bunch of follow-up questions. You're father is from here.
My father is from, the Bay Area. He grew up in Oakland, and then Sassoon, mm-hmm. Green Valley Highlands.
Yeah, and, I was married in Green Valley, Adam.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was a lovely wedding.
That's where my grandparents lived forever. I spent a lot of time on that golf course.
Yeah, producer, choreographer, but director of What Men Want.
Yeah.
February 8th.
We're coming up.
And I wanted to ask you just first about choreography. Uh-huh. If you have an early choreography moment, was there a movie or was there something that sparked something in you? Because that was your first career, correct?
My first career was dancing and then kind of chorus boy.
Yeah.
Like that was my big dream in life, was to be a chorus boy. Like I grew up watching musicals and going to... see movies. I grew up with a lot of fantasy around me, and my mom and dad shared a great love of musical theater and musical movies, and so that was sort of deep within my that's deeply embedded in my upbringing. Mm-hmm. I'm not that guy who can go like, I remember like when I saw The Red Shoes or Singing in the Rain, or it wasn't that. It was like, it was sort of more cumulative. I mean, it was just like music and dancing were just like just a part of me, and my parents loved it too. It just sort of went down that way. And then when I was young, like I started participating in plays because I thought I was going to be in theater when I was really young, and I love play acting and playing piano and all of that, and singing, classical, songbook material and Broadway and yada, yada, yada. And then I was just doing theater in both summer camp and school, and starting to compete in like school competitions. And I was part of play production and all that. So, my path was sort of laid out very early. I just stuck to it. It was sort of like, rather than it becoming the sideline thing, I just sort of hung in there.
Was there a point during the choreography where you were thinking, I'd like to direct? There's a path
no,
there to
there
be a director.
No, there was never. That is one thing I can say for sure. There was never that. I mean, the choreography thing didn't start until very late. Like, I didn't start dancing. I took my first dance class at Juilliard. I had gotten into Juilliard, and then I took my first dance class, basically. And my audition was a little like Flashdance. It was just like, it was just, it was crazy. I can't believe that I got in. I think that everybody at Juilliard couldn't believe I got in. And then when I left, I just wanted to be a chorus boy and do musical theater. And I moved back out to LA after a few years doing a lot of regional theater. And while I was dancing out here, I got a job dancing for Janet Jackson. I shouldn't say out here, I'm in San Francisco. When I was in LA, I got a job dancing for Janet Jackson. And then Paula Abdul hired me to do the Oscars in 1990 when she was choreographing that. And I did a video for her. And then I wasn't working very much. And I lied my way, like somebody, my roommate at the time was working in a production office of a music video place. And literally somebody ran into the room and said, "We've lost our choreographer." And I sort of turned around and went, "Well, I'm a choreographer. I can do it." And they were like, "Okay, you got to meet the director right now."
And you were not a choreographer.
I was not a choreographer. I was a dancer, and but I needed a job.
Yeah.
And they hired me. I lied. I said that I'd worked with Janet Jackson and Paula Abdul, which was not a lie, but I had definitely not choreographed for them.
Yeah.
And that started my whole career, because it ended up being a very successful collaboration with the director, who was Julian Temple, who was a very prolific music video director, commercial director at the time. So that's how that happened. But so then that just kept like rolling along for years. I never really turned back. I didn't professionally dance anymore, almost virtually after that ever.
Yeah.
And I never fantasized about becoming a director. I just thought I was all, I just suddenly was like, oh, well, this is my life forever now. I'm going to do this. I don't even know that I'm very good at it, but I'll just keep going as long as people will hire me. And then, you know, 12 years in, some people said to me, like, we think you should direct. A couple actors said to me, you should direct. And I took the opportunity. And so I used what little money I had saved up. And I made a short film, but this was back before digital. I mean, it was literally, I had to like ask for film ends and...
It was expensive to make a short film.
It was expensive to make a short film. I mean, it was like, I think mine ended up costing like $45,000 or something. But I also had like 100 dancers in it, and I had like multiple sets, and I had like all of this crazy stuff going on. I mean, it was very dance and music based short film. And my producer of that film, without asking me, entered me into Sundance, and I got in. And so while all that was going on, but right before I did that, my sister, who is a producer, my younger sister, was trying to get a movie made. And she said, would you ever come in and meet as a director? And I said, sure. And I read the script and I gave her notes, and she was like, this is great. Please come in. I went in and I got the job, and that job was the wedding planner.
Yeah, in San Francisco.
Which was
Jennifer
made
Lopez.
In San Francisco, yes. And but yeah, that was never the plan. That was never, ever the plan.
Yeah.
And, you know, so here I am. And then after that, no one would hire me as a choreographer anymore, so I had to keep directing.
First movie, and in San Francisco, San Francisco has a reputation for being not a really easy place to make a movie.
It's not. It's really expensive.
Yeah.
It's really expensive.
How was it for permitting. You?
It was fine for me. I was sort of oblivious to all of that. I wasn't a producer on that. I'm a producer now on all my stuff. But I don't.
Yeah.
But then I left that to other people. You know, that was 20 years ago. So I was just naive. And I was just like going, well, I thought it was easy.
Yeah.
You know, everywhere we went, I would. But here's the thing about San Francisco. The iconic locations in San Francisco are just so freaking picturesque. I mean, it production designs itself. There's, you know, you do not have to do much to the exterior locations of this city to make it look theatrical. It is a theatrical looking city.
Yeah.
Its topography is magnificent. The parks are gorgeous. The buildings are historic. There's the ocean. I mean, it's just beautiful. So it's great.
Yeah, I live in Alameda, and I take the ferry back every day. And then I look back at the city, and every day it's like a different, like the sky looks different. There's something, I'm blown away every day. I never get sick of it.
It's magnificent. You know, I mean, honestly, like I have a place in New York now, but when I was living in New York, when I was younger, I felt I didn't have enough money to ever leave. mm-hmm. city, basically. And so I was always in it. So when you're living inside of that a lot, you just see a lot of vertical and it looks, you know, pretty gray. It's when you, but, you know, New York is pretty big. And so when you get outside of it and get to look back at it, I mean, that feeling of like flying into any of these cities that have these beautiful metropolitan, you mm-hmm. know, architecture, it's just, it's heaven for me.
Well, I'm going to speed through your career now. So Step Up Movies, thank you for giving us Channing Tatum.
You're welcome.
The Hairspray, 2007, thank you for giving us Zac Efron. you produced the Academy Awards
I
in
2010. Which was 20 years after I had danced on the Oscars as a dancer.
Yeah.
And then 20 years later, it was my show. And I got to produce. I was the youngest producer in history for that show.
That
and
must have been lovely.
I cried all night. Yeah. I cried all freaking night.
And that wasn't one of the years where they like switched the best picture or something.
No. There was no big gaffes in it. I mean, I had some historic moments. I had
Who won the best? Just so I can get the placement of it.
Hurt Locker against Avatar, the biggest movie in history, won over. And best, you know, directors was Kathryn Bigelow, the first female director in history to get the Oscar, you know, against her ex-husband who had made the biggest movie in history. You know, it was just an extraordinary night. And that's when they kind of, you know, for the time reintroduced the 10 best picture, you know, thing to try to open things up a little bit. It's so funny, like the Academy is really wants to do the right thing by everybody. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And they are always betwixt and between because ABC rightly wants the ratings and they want, you know, they want a big, big show and entertainment in there. And the Academy is like, but this is a night about us and excellence and all that. So they don't really care about the entertainment part of it. So it's a very push me, pull you experience producing that show.
But you're happy. You're smiling
I'm fine.
About
oh,
it.
Yeah. Freaking, are you kidding? It was like heaven on earth. It was like I was. How much can I swear on this? Like,
you could swear. I just put a little. I put a little explicit.
I don't even think it was a pig and like I was like let's just bring on the chorus girls and let's you know make the show. And I did something actually that was really funny. I think I'm the only producer who's ever actually done this. Is I contacted every woman who was going to be presenting on the stage, and 2 weeks before I said, send me pictures of your dresses. I need to see the fittings because I want your entrances and exits to be comfortable for you. So if you're walking downstairs, something like that, I need to know what you're wearing so I can properly bring you in and bring you out. Uh-huh. So I had pictures of everybody's clothes before, you know, they came on. And I got from a very dear friend of mine who I will not name, sent me her picture and said, just so you know, my dress wants you to know it wants a very long walk.
Very nice.
Yes. So, anyway.
Well, going through forward even more, What Women Want, did you see the original?
I did see the original, the Nancy Meyer, Mel Gibson, Helen Hunt movie, right?
Yeah. Give me your review. What did you, when you saw it,
well,
did you
I
like
saw
it?
Well, when I remember it feeling very, at the time, it was very entertaining. I remember it feeling very big, and Mel Gibson was incredibly charming, and Helen Hunt, you know, it just seemed very sort of, excuse me, smart and pithy, and Marissa Tomei was terrific in it, and I remember thinking it was very charming and very funny. And then when I took this job, I went back and watched it, and the craft of the movie is great, and the writing is great, but you couldn't make that movie in today's climate. The way that he treats women and it's insane. But weirdly, underneath the messaging underneath that movie is you can't be that way with women and it be okay.
Yeah.
Like, he has to learn to treat women well. And so it has this sort of subversive feminist message underneath it, but it is really overshadowed by his extraordinarily toxic sort of chauvinism and, you know, misogyny.
And there was something about when I heard this movie was being remade, and I'm calling it like a spiritual cousin because there's no similar characters or anything, a little bit of me was thinking about that. Now, can this movie be made now? But you made it totally different. It's an empowerment movie. That's at the center of
it. Yeah, it's a total reimagining of what would happen if a woman got this power, and it shares no other DNA, basically.
Yeah.
You know, there is the funny, in the Mel Gibson one, he has a funny reading mine sex scene with Marissa Tomei, and in mine there's one with her and Aldous Hodge, with Taraji and Aldous Hodge, but those are the only two scenes that have any kind of kinship. But like, what, you're not going to do that? Like, I needed to, like, I need to, like, because I personally, I'm without like getting into sort of them any like too much information kind of territory, I think about that sometimes, like when I'm with my man, like I'm like when those eyes get closed, I'm like, what are they thinking? Where'd they go? What's happening? Like, and I get in my own head, you know what I mean? Sometimes. And I think that it's something that it's fairly common.
It's a sex scene in the movie where she can
hear what's going on.
Hear
in
what's
head.
Going on.
And it's not exactly the best review of her.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So, very funny movie. I enjoyed it. I also found it touching. I cried a little at the end. I'm a little bit of a crier, but you know, I didn't think I was going to cry at this movie. It was very sweet movie.
Did you feel as a man indicted in any way?
Not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all, because I've seen so many movies that go the other way, and you know, I grew up watching Revenge of the Nerds and thinking that's funny, and now I watch it and I'm like, "Oh, that's a rape." You know, I mean, so I feel like, you know, I have boys, I don't have daughters, but I feel definitely watching a movie like this, like, okay, it's okay for the men to kind of look bad in this. And the men, the father, there are good characters. The father is
a very kind character,
and the love interest is a very kind character.
And then a couple of her other co-working men, I mean, her assistant is a man who is great, and they're, and, you know, Max Greenfield's character, you know, seems wobbly, but like, you know, you know, kind of balances out, and it's, you know, I think that it's very fair and balanced.
I don't think men can complain that way for at least a decade. That's my feeling. But
I have to say right now, I don't know if anybody's going to be happy on my team for saying this, but like, as a white guy, I feel like we've had a good run. Like right now, I think like I am really happy that there is attention elsewhere in the world, making sure that everybody else is being looked after.
Sure. Well, very much empowerment movie. And Taraji P. Henson, was she already attached when you got involved?
She was attached when I got involved, and she is the reason that I came on.
She's fantastic.
Yeah,
I mentioned Channing Tatum and Zac Efron, and you know your movies in the past, I've gotten a sense of discovery with actors. I've seen
Jennifer
her in
Lopez
stuff.
Had never done a romantic comedy when I did Wedding Planner, and so that, you know, and Mandy Moore and Shane West, you know, they were new when I did Walk to Remember, and even like Queen Latifah hadn't done a comedy before I did Bringing Down the House. I don't think
Vin Diesel
as a comedy character in The Bass Fire. Like, you know, who knew? You know, there's been Miley Cyrus and Liam Hemsworth, like, in producing that. So it's like I work with actors who are dipping their toe into untested territory.
It didn't feel like she was in untested territory. She reminded me of Sandra Bullock and having a clumsiness, but also there's there's something about
it. It's fearless.
It's fearless.
It's fearless. It's courageous. She does not care if she looks stupid. You have to really rise to the top of the comedy game. You have to not care if you look like a fool sometimes. That's just part of it, because things are the funniest when the characters are at their most desperate. Mm-hmm. And it is not a good look to be that desperate.
Yeah.
And so she understood that, and she knew that she was going to be, she was going to be taken down a peg in this. Yeah. And she loved it. But she has not shown any fear in any of the characters that she's played throughout her career. She's not like careful or delicate about how she's perceived, or every character is really fleshed out, full of like rich irony and kind of like complicated wisdom and self-assuredness or insecurities that all seem to make for a really fully fleshed out character and like a lot of humanity. And so I thought that is a person that I want to work with. And we can do some really interesting stuff together.
Yeah,
you know?
She was fantastic. There are a lot of scenes or a lot of situations that I felt like were just kind of comedy petri dishes. I mean, you have Erykah Badu, very funny, hilarious as a tarot card reader. Mm-hmm. You've got this girlfriends group mm-hmm. That are just kicking it a few times in the movie. You've got a poker scene. I feel like there was a lot of improv in this, just a lot of, and you tell me, I mean.
There is. I mean, the scenes were completely scripted, and there are things like in the movie that were loosely scripted. Like there's a scene where she's getting ready to have potential sex with Kellan Lutz.
Uh-huh.
And she goes into a bathroom, and that was not scripted virtually at all. It just says she goes into the bathroom and gets ready. And I just sort of put a little microphone. I had a microphone and put a little speaker in the bathroom with her. And I said, okay, we have like about 10 minutes to shoot this scene. So I put up two cameras. And I just said, now do this, now do this, now do that. And she just kept doing everything I told her to do. And it's so funny in the movie. Like, the laughter during that scene mm-hmm. gets really high-pitched. Again, there's just an enormous amount of trust. So when you hire a cast like Tracy Morgan, Wendy McClendon Covey, Jason Jones, Erica, like all of those actors, when you put them in a room together, you do not want them to be, or I did not want them to be handcuffed to the script. Like mm-hmm. we got everything that was scripted, and then I said, okay, now let's kind of go a little nutty. Nice. And we did.
Well, I'm going to, sorry, bad segue, but I'm going
to. I love a bad segue. Nothing appeals to me like a bad segue.
Okay. A little bit of a lightning round. I'm going to ask you a few quick questions.
Do it.
Did you get to meet John Waters for Hairspray?
Okay.
Because he lives in San Francisco here. We see him on
minibuses. Can I tell you my John Waters story? Do I have time?
Yeah, you have time.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when I got the job for Hairspray, we were actually shooting Step Up in Baltimore. And when it all happened, I said, can I get John Waters' email address? And the studio sent it to me, and they said, and I wrote an email, and all it said was, Dear Mr. Waters, my name is Adam Shankman. I was just hired to direct the movie of the musical of Hairspray. I hope you don't mind. Wishing you all the best. Hope to meet you one day, Adam. Within 5 minutes, I got an email back saying, oh my God, this is so fabulous. I'm so excited for you. Where are you? And I said, well, and then I wrote him back. Weirdly, I'm in Baltimore. And he was like, can we have lunch tomorrow?
Oh my God.
So I'm like, my head explodes first. It was like scanners, like big gay scanners. And so like, you know, sparklers and disco balls exploded out of my neck. And we met for lunch the next day. And I was terrified because I so desperately did not want to disappoint this man. And you know, he's John Waters. And so he feels very mercurial. Like I didn't know what to expect. And he is the most kind, supportive, creative, imaginative, free-spirited man. And we had lunch, and then he said, well, do you want to see the neighborhood? And I said, what neighborhood? And he said, where I shot Hairspray. And I was like, are you kidding? So we jumped in his car, and he drove me around to all the places that they shot his version of Hairspray. And then he showed me even like the homes where the people that the characters were based on lived like all the real stuff. And I felt like I was going to die. Like I was so overwhelmed with my gratitude to this man's generosity about like I could have tanked that thing. Like I could have been the worst. And he was just so excited and generous. And I expressed to him, I was like, you have so many fans of your movies and there's so many fans of the musical. And he was like, screw it, do your thing. Like, this is like, Hairspray belongs to everybody. And so I begged him to be in the movie, which he was like, no. I said, okay, well, you just play the Flasher. And he was like, fine, I'll come up and play Flasher. So he did the opening number, he did the Flasher. Then I get a call from the studio after the movie was done saying, John just saw the movie. And I was like, why didn't you tell me? We screened it in New York for John. And I was going insane because I wanted to be there when he saw it. I wanted to be there and I didn't want to be there, but I wanted to know what was happening. And I just got an email saying, Dear Adam, I just saw the movie. You've made me the proudest grandfather in the world.
Oh.
Love John.
That's perfect.
Yeah. And that was that. So
story.
That became that in and of itself made it virtually the perfect experience for me. Like, that's all you can ask for. Look, I'm fucking crying right now. Like that made me tear. Like, it makes me tear up thinking
that is
about
not
it.
What I was expecting. Right. I mean, I've met him. I've been to his apartment. He's an absolute nice guy. But I that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Good story. Yeah. Well, I just got one more. And I asked you this on the Facebook Live. So, sorry.
Okay.
But different audiences. Mm-hmm. What Men Want.
Yes.
No, like, centerpiece dance scene. Was
no.
Was it hard to not do that, or were you okay with that?
I was super okay with it because I you know what's weird? They asked me if I wanted to put one in, and where would it go if there was? And I said, if it's not here, it's not here for a reason, and the movie isn't asking for it. So let's just not do it. Like, I'm not like the guy who like wants to put that crazy stamp on everything. Like that's I have a million different parts. I mean, I'm telling you, before I looked at this script and said, please, I want to do this movie, I actually wanted to do a really small, dark mother-daughter character piece. I'm looking at dramas and thrillers and all that. Yes, I have other musicals on my plate and all that, but I wasn't looking at comedy at all. So, people are complicated. I like to think that I have more sides to me than just comedy and music and all of that. So if there's no room for a dance number, I don't want to put a dance number in. I just didn't feel necessary.
Yeah, you've had many great dance numbers. So
yeah, I've done
the
some good dance.
Good.
You know what? I've done some good dance. So I'm not mad at dance right now.
Well, February 8th, What Men Want. Thank you so much for coming to the Chronicle, coming out here. I didn't have to go to a hotel room to interview you. You came to our dingy archive.
I like the dingy archive. I find the smell of actual documents is making me so happy. Like, it reminds me, like, it's like holding a book. It's like holding paper in your hand and turning a page and smelling all that. I am one of those people who misses it. I do not like reading on my devices. I like things, you know, to hold. It makes me feel more whole and real and grounded. I don't know. It's very sentimental.
Well, I pulled the John Waters file. You can take a quick look through that. We have our old photos of him. And thank you for coming to the Chronicle. Good luck with the movie.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Datebook Podcast, thanks for listening. You are listening to the San Francisco Chronicle. Thank you to Adam Shankman. Our producer today is me, Peter Hartlob. Supervising producers are King Kaufman and Libby Coleman. Executive producer is Tim O'Rourke. And our editor-in-chief is Audrey Cooper. Our music is Mozart Symphony 40 in G minor by Blue Dot Sessions. Read our columns and subscribe to The Chronicle at www.sfchronicle.com. San Francisco Chronicle podcasts are on Apple Podcasts and other streaming services. Listen at www.sfchronicle.com/podcasts with an S.